From WGCU News, this is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The Telling Project is traveling across Florida and helping veterans shape and share their stories about their years of service. This month, Southwest Florida veterans who served during the Cold War, Vietnam, and Iraq are sharing their stories and getting help from the Florida Humanities Council to bring those stories to audiences in Naples and Fort Myers. Coming up on the program, we'll talk to three veterans working with the Telling Project in our area about how they're channeling their military experience into stories to pass on to others. Plus, shorebirds are back on our beaches for their nesting season, and there's a small army of dedicated volunteers called Shorebird Stewards. They're working to educate beachgoers about these birds and the critical nesting habitat that our beaches provide. They spread the word about these birds and help preserve their nests on our high traffic beaches. This weekend, the Audubon Society is holding training seminars to get more shorebird stewards on board. We'll find out more a little later in the show, but first, the news. This is Gulf Coast Live. I'm Julie Glenn. The Telling Project has traveled from Pensacola to Tampa, working with veterans to help them craft stories about their military experience for the stage. It's all part of the Florida Humanities Council's efforts to help veterans and non-veterans process and share the struggle of coming home from war and moving from a military life to the civilian world. The Telling Project is coming to Southwest Florida with events in late April and an event right here at WGCU in early May. Joining me now are three veterans who are taking part in the Telling Project and sharing their stories when it comes to Southwest Florida. In the studio today, we have Jason Calabrese, a combat veteran who served with the Army's 1st Infantry Division in Iraq. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We also have Peter Slota, who served as an Army medic in the Vietnam War. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
Also in our studio today is Joseph Cofield, who retired after 21 years in the Army during the Cold War. Welcome.
Thank you.
And helping these vets bring their stories to audiences in Southwest Florida is Tyler Tarrant, the program coordinator for the Florida Humanities Council. Welcome to Gulf Coast Live.
Thank you.
We are speaking to veterans from three generations of conflict and war who now call Southwest Florida home. They're sharing their stories through the Telling Project and bringing their stories to the stage in Naples and Fort Myers later this month. What questions do you have for our vets? Call in and share your thoughts at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media. And on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag GCL. So first, Jason Calabrese, you joined the Army shortly after the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001, right?
Yes.
Tell me about how that attack spurred you into joining the military.
Well, I think that basically I was living at Long Island University at CW Post at the time, which is very close to the city. And I remember seeing the news that morning after someone had given me a call. And people are affected by events of this nature, but living to that in that proximity really just hit close to home. And I had this feeling of just a fear of, like, who's going to protect us. And I think that's the first time that I really had that call to duty, in essence, of just, like, I was in education for a long time. I had been working on degrees. And that's when it really hit home that I lived in a country where I had the protection and the freedom and liberty that other people had provided. And so that was a call to duty, basically.
You felt sort of indebted. And then you saw this happen and you're like, okay, now I want to do something.
Right, exactly.
And so what was it like when you went in and you went to Iraq?
I did. Well, first, after basic training and everything, we didn't go to Iraq. I was stationed in Germany for a year. Did basic training for 6 months, went to Germany for a year, and then participated in OIF-2, and that was 2004. So I'd already been in for a little bit before I deployed.
Mm-hmm. Then when you went to Iraq, what was that like? I mean, what kind of things did you see there?
I was there for about 14 months, and I was stationed in Adwar, which is a little town between Samarra and Tikrit in the Sunni Triangle. Adwar was the hometown of Saddam Hussein, and the 10th Cavalry had found him before we came in to replace them. And so it was an experience that it was something that really, until you're in that situation, it's kind of hard to explain, but it's also a lot of time that there were a lot of different emotions, a lot of different experiences, some of them good, some bad.
D- Do you feel like having that experience, you look to news reports and video coverage of things that are happening in that part of the world? Do you look at them a little bit differently because you've had your feet on the ground there?
Yes, I believe so. But it almost seems like being back home now, being reacclimated, it almost seems like something that's just worlds away. And so I think that people have a problem. People can't relate to it in a sense unless you've been there. So the Telling Project gives us an opportunity to kind of shed some light on what it's like to live in those situations.
What kind of things do you reflect on today, looking back on your time there then? I mean, there's been a little bit of distance, but...
Right. Looking back now, I have no regrets about the time that I spent there. I kind of view it as something sort of like getting your wisdom teeth extracted. It's something that you would never regret doing. You would never necessarily want to do again. But for the most part, I look back on it with pride and just the camaraderie with the individuals that I served with, too.
Yeah, that's a great analogy with the wisdom teeth.
Thanks.
So, Peter Slota, at age 18, you were a medic in the Vietnam War. How did you find yourself in the military? Did you sign up?
I did. I was kind of tired of school. I had thoughts of trying to be a doctor, and I just decided that that would be the way to go. I got some basic medical training, and then I went to OR procedures school, so I was going to be a surgical tech for the most part.
Was it kind of a crash course?
No, it was actually pretty extensive, seven, 8 months or whatever. Think of Margaret Houlihan on MASH, you know, assisting the surgeon. That's primarily what I did. I did some flying in helicopters as a medic on there, but that was pretty limited.
So you voluntarily went into the military because you wanted to get a bit of an edge on the medical training?
I was tired of school, and they would have some financial assistance afterwards, and that was kind of the idea was if I wanted to be a doctor, maybe I could get some ground floor understanding of what was going on.
So what was your experience like being a medic over there?
You know,
I mean, it's kind of hard to summarize, I would imagine.
You know, Jason said the same thing. It's difficult to convey in words exactly what we went through. We got hit the first night I was there, and I was just nearly wetting my pants saying, is this what it's going to be like for a year? Because I had a year deployment. We didn't use that word then anyway. We just had a tour. The people that we dealt with were right from the field in most cases in surgery. So we saw the worst of everything. There were two units, two field hospitals on our base. The 24th EVAC handled all the head and neuro injuries, and the 93rd EVAC where I was, we handled everything else. So we saw some pretty horrific stuff.
Are there any people in particular that you remember from that time period?
Oh, yeah. My roommate, Fran Morell, passed away last year. I finally managed to track him down about 3 months after he passed away. I remember Sergeant Sakota, the head of the OR. I remember some of the nurses and doctors and such. Some of that stuff you just don't forget.
You mentioned a minute ago MASH. Did you appreciate the way that, I mean, I don't know, it's pop culture and that was comedy, but the way that it was presented, do you think that it was kind of a somewhat realistic view?
Absolutely. Especially the programs, if you remember, they had a few where there was no laugh track. Mm-hmm. They had one where there was a clock that they counted down 30 minutes because he had to have a piece of aorta or something in 30 minutes or he was going to die. Or the guy who died at 20 minutes of midnight on Christmas and they moved the clock to after so his family wouldn't remember that he died on Christmas. The humor was there to some degree as well when you're working closely with people. The barriers are down. You're just all working together.
Was it hard, though, to watch things, these types of portrayals at first, or did it become easier over time?
I'm not sure I can answer that. Some things are still very disturbing to me today. The VA has me with PTSD, so I kind of avoid some stuff.
Yeah. So did PTSD, did that come on immediately after coming back, or did you go to work and then once you've, you know, found you had more time on your hands, did it become a problem later?
We don't have that much time.
Yeah.
It's I know now, having been involved in treatment for a few years, that some of that stuff affected me right from day one. there are particular events that I can relate to. I will say this. The first time I carried a leg down to the incinerator was pretty gruesome, and I remember every second of it. Some of the stuff I didn't know that I was dealing with until 40, 45 years later. Started with a heart attack with me back in 2013, which turns out to be Agent Orange connected. That was something many of us have to deal with. So I started getting involved with the VA at that time, and here I am 4 years later.
Now telling your story again for people who may not have had military experience.
Yeah, we were on a veteran's trip on the Naples Princess or the Lady Jane or something, and I overheard Tyler talking about something, and I kind of shuffled over and listened in, and we got to speaking, and he invited me to have an interview about it, and I was kind of reluctant at first, but it's important that people understand what we went through. Some differences between Jason. They were welcomed when they got back for the most part, and we were quite not welcomed back.
Yeah, that was a lesson learned, but a lesson learned too late for your group coming back from Vietnam.
That's why we take care of each other today as best we can. I did learn about some similarities between me and Afghan and Iraq veterans. They had dry, we had wet, but war is war. And one of the reasons that I did this also is to let people know the world out there is very different than where you think it is on Fifth Avenue in Naples. One of the most important things I learned, I talked to an Iraq vet who was wounded, is the time and effort that people spent just getting water, the stuff that we take for granted. And many people who espouse such patriotic values really don't have any idea what the rest of the world is like. Their idea of a foreign country is a resort in Jamaica or something like that.
Yeah, very different world. So, Joseph Cofield, you were with the Army for more than two decades during the Cold War, very different kind of military experience. So how did you first enter the military?
Well, this is quite an experience for me, and this program is a little too short for me to tell you the full story, but I will give you as much as possible here. When I left high school, I wanted to enter college, and I had to tell you, Julie, that I had a wild awakening because I found out that you had to pay for college, unlike K-12 system. And the military was a great option for me, and the recruiter told me that I could go for 4 years. The Army would pay me while I learned my trade and also give me an opportunity to get education. And I thought that was a great deal since I didn't have a lot of money in my pocket to go to college. So the Army was a great start for me.
So you spent 14 years in Europe. That's almost pretty much a career in itself.
Yes, and that turned out to be a real blessing for me. Of course, when I first went to Germany, my first tour, I thought that was the worst thing that the U.S. Army could do for a young person like myself. On my second and third and fourth tours, I began to realize that it was a great opportunity for me to experience the world. It was a great opportunity for me to see how other people live. It was a great opportunity for me to broaden my horizon. And it turned out to be one of the best things to happen to me because I even married my wife while I was in Germany.
So you were in Germany on every tour?
Yes. I had an opportunity to get stationed in Germany and went back stateside a couple of times. And because it was the Cold War and because of my MOS, I was always going back because my MOS were required to be full strength for all time. That means 95% so that you can guard that, fold the gap. And I was one of those MOS's signaler that had to come back to supply that communication.
What does MOS stand for?
MOS stands for Military Occupational Specialist.
Okay. Good.
We all remember our MOS.
Everyone in the room but me knows what that is. Sorry about that. I just wanted to get some clarification. So Tyler Tarrant, with the Florida Humanities Council, these men and two others are going to be sharing their stories through the Telling Project when it comes into Southwest Florida next week. How do you first connect with veterans in this area, and how do you decide who will ultimately be telling their stories on stage?
Well, thank you, Julie. Essentially, the Florida Humanities Council, we inherited this program and actually work with a national program called the Telling Project, designed to recruit veterans that want to tell their story. Right now, only about 1% of families have someone serving in the military. So we find it incredibly important that people know what these veterans are experiencing and they get a platform to share their stories. So essentially down here, there was a need. Some people came to us and they wanted their veterans to be able to speak. And we went out into the community, worked with other nonprofits. And essentially, I talked with everyone I could to find some veterans that wanted to come forward. Because the one thing I will say about this program, and I'm inspired just even sitting here, is not only is it the courageous act of being serving in the military and deploying and maybe being exposed to combat, but having the willingness and the ability to come forward and actually tell your story is quite remarkable. And we're just thrilled that we're able to do this.
Do you find that sometimes veterans, when they get to a situation where they're going to tell other people that have never had any military experience, and then describing all of it for people, do you find that they find a little bit of a catharsis in that, or just kind of like getting it out?
Well, that's a really good question. And actually, it's not our stated intent with the program. The stated intent is to really bridge the communication gap with the community. However, what we have found by doing this program in five cities in the state is that that's exactly what a lot of the veterans that participate say. They do get a sense of fulfillment of just telling the story. But we leave that to everybody's personal, unique experiences.
So the Telling Project is bringing the stories of military veterans in our region to the public with performances this month in Southwest Florida. We're speaking with veterans from Iraq, Vietnam, and the Cold War. Call in and share your thoughts or ask your questions at 877-428-8255. That's 877-GCU-TALK. On Facebook, we're at WGCU Public Media, and on Twitter, we are at WGCU using the hashtag of GCL. So I'm going to go back to Jason Calabrese. You've described coming home from Iraq as being similar to being an astronaut who just returned from the moon. How bizarre was it to go from a military life to coming back to just everything's normal?
Well, it is a very unique experience, and also it's something veterans can relate to, combat veterans at least, that there's something terrible about war, but something so raw that it makes sense. It's survival, and it's something that you get. And then when you reacclimate back into society, you step back into all of these things that go on around us, and sometimes it's hard to get back into the – it's not an artificial world, but it's something that you see differently when you return to it. But I was fortunate. I went in when I was 27, and I was already who I was, essentially. And so when I came back, I wasn't growing up in that situation in my young formative years. And I came back to a great support network. Not everybody has that. And so my reacclimation was the best landing I could have had because I had loved ones, I had family, friends. But you're still coming back from an experience where you need time to reacclimate. And I think a lot of veterans, when they come back, there's, in my opinion, my experience, and the lessons that we've learned from previous generations, we were welcomed when we came back, and we had a great homecoming. We didn't have the same things that have happened in the past, but still, it's something that it's the best you could hope for, but you still need to reacclimate, and it's a slow process. And even though people want to help, we're proud individuals, so a lot of veterans are too proud to ask for the help. And I think one benefit of the Telling Project is that you see other individuals and there's a camaraderie there. And it's like, hey, it's okay.
Yeah, we've done a few shows with veterans and talked about that difficulty in asking for help. But it seems like it's a very different world now than it was even 15, 20 years ago, mm-hmm. where there's a lot more awareness about what PTSD even is.
Right.
And do you feel, though, I mean, you mentioned a little bit younger people going into the military. Do you feel like they have different psychological impacts? And then do you feel like those psychological impacts are being recognized and taken care of a little bit with veterans when they get back?
I think there's much more awareness. There's much more research now. There's much more of a impetus to take care of the soldiers, not just externally but internally as well. And, you know, that's something, unfortunately, that soldiers before us made that sacrifice, willingly or unwillingly. Those are lessons learned from the past. So I think there's more awareness. I still think that there's a lot we can do. But, yeah, for the most part, I think that the help and resources are out there. It's just a matter of accepting them.
So, Peter Slota, you came back to that different world. When you came back, when you left Vietnam and came back to the United States, what was that transition like?
I was in surgery one day, and 36 hours later, I was having dinner at my parents' table. It was shocking. I was lost. My story includes alcohol and drug abuse to the point of there are 22 veterans a day that commit suicide. It's an understated statistic, and I could have been one of those. I'm fortunate. I managed to find some help and get sober quite a while ago. Otherwise, I'd have been gone a long time ago. But the return was pretty brutal because the country was not only against the war, it was against us. That has changed for the good, that people learn to separate the war from the warriors. I see that as a positive thing. The help that I get from the VA medically and such is good. Everybody I interact with at the VA is good. Administration of the VA is a different story. And getting claims processed and looked at fairly is still quite difficult for a lot of us.
Yeah. But, I mean, what sticks with me from what you said is one day you're in surgery in the battlefield, and then 36 hours later, you're having dinner at your parents' house. I mean, how do you have a conversation over tuna casserole after something like that? I mean, what do you talk about? I mean, I could see how. I mean, but there was no transition. There was nothing when you came back. There was no easing back into anything.
No, you're just right back in the world, and everybody is oblivious to what you've gone through. They have no clue, and you have no way, you have no language to communicate that with. I know we're on radio, but you see me just shaking my head here because I don't know that I can explain it any better than that. My problem at that point was I still had a year left to do. So after I finished my training, I got sent over, and I still had one more year to serve in the military. The Army and I didn't get along very well after that.
Yeah. So did you know much about what was happening in America?
Nothing.
With that mood and that animosity? Did you know about that while you were in Vietnam before you came back?
Oh, yeah. That was pretty evident. When I went over in July of 69, that was trending in that direction, to use the proper word today, trending. When I get back, I actually got involved in the anti-war movement. John Kerry came to Worcester, and I joined the group of people who were saying, we're screwed up over there. We're not doing the right things. So,
yeah. So Joseph Caulfield, during the Cold War, you were over there in Europe, but you were in Europe not too far after World War II, and this was a nation that was rebuilding. Did you feel any tensions, or did you notice any scars or aftermath from World War II while you were there?
No, actually, I felt a great sense of pride that the Europeans and the German in particular had about the United States and the great assistance that was given to rebuild this country of Germany.
So then after that, you got involved as an educator and you founded a nonprofit called the Constitution Project Incorporated. So how did your experience in the Army influence not only your time as an educator, but then also getting involved with the Constitution Project?
I would say the U.S. Army had a great impact on me doing this project now. It gave me probably the basis for having enough courage to get out to do this. Well, first of all, it gave me the physical endurance to go out to do this 27 miles in each of the 67 counties. And also, it gave me the basic of the knowledge that I had. One time, I got very upset with the U.S. Army because I had orders to go to Alaska, and that was my dream one day. But then I realized that the Army knew what was best for you. And there's a motto that says that when you and the Army agree, everybody is happy. So they sent me to Fort Gordon, Georgia, where I became an instructor at the Non-Commissioned Officer Academy. And this made me realize that I really wanted to be a teacher, and I never got it out of my blood. And so it took me 25 years before I could get back into the classroom. So I would say that while the Army was giving me a hard time, it also set the basis for me to understand that my dream of becoming a teacher was to become a reality. And I had
so while you were just kind of following along, and you're going along with, oh, I don't really want to do this, I don't want to do this, and then you ended up where you needed to be in order to have that realization.
Absolutely, that experience that I had, knowing people, getting to know a lot about the world, it made teaching history easy for me when I became a teacher. And then, of course, when I had my other dream of becoming a person that really knew the Constitution by getting into the Georgetown and learning a lot about the Constitution, I knew that the Constitution was something that I really wanted to experience and share with others. And so this is what led me to the Constitution Project, getting Constitution booklets out to all fifth graders and around the state of Florida.
Yeah, just getting that information, just getting the hard copy out to people instead of everybody Googling everything, right?
So, absolutely.
Tyler Tarrant with the Florida Humanities Council, I mean, you've been working with these veterans and you're working up and down, you know, Florida. Is there a commonality that you're finding in spite of generation or what war they served in? Is there something that is one common thread that kind of holds all these people together?
We've done this program in Pensacola, Gainesville, Orlando, Tampa Bay, and now the Naples, Fort Myers area. And I'd say the one commonality is all the veterans that come together establish camaraderie, and that even though each of their stories are unique and differ in many, many respects, there's a power in that they all serve their country and they come together and tell their story. And we've just had fantastic reception from all the communities that have heard it. So we hope to do many more programs.
And do you find that they all kind of have a feeling of pride?
Yeah, I wouldn't want to put words in anyone's mouth, but I think they do feel a sense of pride and are very grateful they were in the program. And mostly the communities themselves respond just not really knowing or understanding what our veterans go through, that they really appreciate the opportunity to listen and hear their stories.
So I wanted to ask each of our veterans before we run out of time, and I know that we could talk about this for hours, but I wanted to ask each of you guys, Mr. Calabrese first, what are some of the things that you find that you're able to express and that you're able to tell as a result of this kind of a project that you might not have ever said out loud?
Well, I think that because as we've discussed, like, so it is hard to – some of it's ineffable, the experience that you have in a combat zone. What I find is I just focus on the particulars, the things, the unique aspects. Like in Iraq, stray dogs were everywhere, and they loved U.S. soldiers. And something like that, something like even seeing people sleeping on rooftops, just – different, unique, individual situations, and convey that so individuals can take the parts and make up the picture of the whole in their own minds. And that's pretty much, in my opinion, that's what I can offer, because I don't have the words to express the macrocosm of it all. And this is what war is like. So I think by telling the details.
All the little micro.
Right, right.
The micro pieces of information and mm-hmm. sights and sounds and smells and
right.
things that you collected. And then those come together to make the macro mm-hmm. story of what you went through.
Yeah.
That's really interesting. And then, so Peter Slota, is there anything that you've been able to like get out and that you've been saying that you didn't imagine you'd probably ever stand on a stage and say?
You know, amazingly enough, I said something to my wife a few weeks ago. And she said, I never knew that. So there's stuff that I've not said over the years that you don't know you haven't said it because you're just not going to say it, generally speaking. So maybe I can look back on this and spot some of those things. But for the most part, it's just trying to get the story out there, let people know that we needed help then. We still need help. And that it's not just a glorious thing. There's a human element to what we do, to what we did.
And there's a human toll also, as you mentioned.
Every single time we send somebody out there, there's a toll. It's not just the people, the 58,000 killed in Vietnam. It's the hundreds of thousands affected. One of the similarities between Iraq and Afghanistan and Vietnam is the fact that the war was all around us. There was no defined lines. People who are doing your laundry during the day might be shooting at you at night. So that kind of toll is something that people don't understand. When even if you're not, you know, right out there in the bush, there's a constant fear because everyone around you is a potential problem.
Yeah, that kind of immersion brings out some sort of like a distrust or a constant fear.
I had a counselor point out to me, he said, do you back into your parking spaces? And I do. It's because I'm ready to leave. I'm ready to go.
Oh, and always have the back to the wall whenever you go to a restaurant?
No.
Those kinds of things?
Not as bad as that, but he told me that my socks were on my shoes ready to go in the morning, and I had no idea he would know that. But that's the kind of things that you're hardwired to do 45 years later that you don't even understand where it comes from.
It's like a hypervigilance.
Yeah, super vigilant.
Always on alert.
Yeah. So, Joseph Cofield, what kind of things are you talking about your experience over in Europe when you're in front of these people?
Well, first I want to offer thanks to Peter and Jason for their comeback service. I was one of the first ones to do that all-volunteer force, and that's one of the things that is a great pride for me. And the fact that you never know when you volunteer for something what your world can lead up to. Because I volunteered for the U.S. Army, many of my dreams that I ever want to accomplish in life have become a reality because of the U.S. Army. And having the opportunity to live outside of the United States for so long, for so many years, it gave me a great appreciation of my country here and why it is so great. People all over Europe be wanting to come to the USA. When I go to other parts of Asia and other places around the world, people want to come here. And I understand why, because I, as a kid from the age of 18 to the age of 39 or so, I lived outside of the United States of America. So I understand why everyone think this nation of ours is so great. So what I want to add to everyone that's listening is that we have a great nation. And we need to keep it that way. And I appreciate all the veterans that serve in the military. And I'm glad that I had an opportunity to serve and carry the weight of the nation on my shoulder. And I think and I hope that everyone, if given the opportunity, would take that opportunity to serve the nation in one way or the other.
We have a call coming in right now from John on the phone. John, what would you like to say?
This is Tom.
Oh, Tom, I'm sorry.
Tom, I was just going to talk about the fact that I was a helicopter pilot for two tours in Vietnam, and then after when I got back from my second tour in '72, I married my wife who I met in Vietnam, and then we decided whether we were going to stay in or get out. I stayed in until '87, and then in '88, I got called back to active duty after being retired for 21 years.
Oh wow!
So you really can never get completely away from it.
Yeah, that's kind of an interesting perspective. Do you feel like you ever actually are completely away from it, even though you are a veteran?
Were you ever near Long Bin, Tom?
Oh, sorry. Tom's gone. Oh. Sorry. Well, we are going to have to leave it there. I want to thank all of our guests for being here on our show and also for everything that you've done for our country. Jason Calabrese, Army combat veteran who served in Iraq. Peter Slota with the Army medic veteran who served in Vietnam. Also Joseph Cofield in the Army who served during the Cold War. And thanks to Tyler Tarrant with the Florida Humanities Council. We have links to the Telling Project and details about its performances in Southwest Florida on our website at wgcunews.org. Coming up, the shorebirds are back. It's their nesting season, and now the Audubon Society is training people on the basic biology of these birds in an effort to teach people how to share the beach responsibly with wildlife that's dependent on it. We'll have more on that when we come back.